morning. As Justice Miller Berman is participating by WebEx, she's asked me to preside as I'm here in the courtroom, and we will proceed with the argument in State versus Buckman. You may proceed.
Honorable members of this court, may it please the court. My name is Robert Cordes. I'm from the Nebraska Commission on Public Advocacy, and I represent the appellant Herman Buckman. This is a DNA Testing Act case. It's the second appearance of the DNA Testing Act phase of this case before this honorable court. The situation arose when the sheriff's office and the police department discovered they had additional evidence that wasn't previously tested. We had an opportunity to test that evidence. And following the results of that testing, there were two evidentiary hearings. And in April of last year, the district court denied relief under the DNA Testing Act under both exoneration and the new trial clauses. We are here today to say that that was error. We ask for a reversal of that. And I want to begin my presentation to you with just a standard of review in this case. Was there an abuse of discretion? And there certainly was. Duncan, the State versus Duncan, just came out in June of last year. And in that case, Your Honors, you pointed out that you want the courts to look at the evidence of the case. And you expect the trial courts to compare the testing results with the evidence of the case. That wasn't actually the first time this court has tried to guide the district courts or trial courts to that very same proposition. In Palmer, footnote 21, you indicate other courts from other jurisdictions have similarly reasoned that DNA evidence warrants a new trial when it compromises key evidence that the prosecutor used against the defendant at trial. So you're telling trial judges and you're telling all participants in DNA testing that case, test this against the evidence that was presented at the trial, or at the evidence of the case at least. And in this situation, that didn't happen. You go to the district court opinion, that was in April. So it was before the decision of Duncan came up, April of 21, but it was still after the many cases where this court has said, compare it to the evidence at trial that the prosecution had used. And the district judge just didn't do that. The order clearly points out what the judge looked at. The judge looked at Dr. Shanfield's testimony, and Dr. Shanfield was a scientist, head of a lab that did some testing on cigarettes mainly, and testified just briefly about, hey, I received two vials that were part of an investigation as to whether or not there was DNA in a pair of panties. But I didn't look at whether there was sperm in there. I didn't even look at that. He did say, he talked about cigarettes. He talked about some other blood work that Dr. Rena Roy had done, and he was able to say that she got that wrong as to whether or not she accurately blood typed Eric Beckwith. But he didn't have anything to add on the question of the panties and the sperm. But a lot of witnesses did. And I want to keep separate the arguments from opening and the arguments of closing, because I know you would tell me those are arguments and not evidence. But there was plenty of evidence in this case. And so it begins with the forensic pathologist. Dr. Tiff, he comes in and testifies, hey, I looked at the sperm that was in the vagina. I tested that. And he looks at the motility, how long that sperm was alive. And he tells the jury that sperm had to have been put there 8 hours before death or later. Okay, so now the jury is informed that the sperm is important, that it's being used to tell the jury whether or not Mr. Buckman was at the crime scene at the time that Denise Siskowski died. He's not the only person. Dr. Rena Roy testifies, same thing. We have sperm found not only in panties, but in the jeans. It's a big ejaculate. It's on panties, on jeans. And it's a single donor. And she testifies that as to the blood type of the person. She wasn't able to do DNA back then, but she testifies as to the blood type. And she says, you can include as possible in the group that could have deposited that semen, Herman Buckman. says you could do that for Eric Beckwith too. And then she went through with the rest of her testimony and talks about how all the other people that were in contact with that decedent before she died, they couldn't have been the depositor of that sperm. Okay? So that's huge evidence placing the defendant with the victim at a time frame. And I should add that Dr. Roy would say that that sperm had to be done, deposited 12 hours. So you have 12 to 8, but it's certainly evidence that the jury's considering. Prosecution's theory of the case is that's important evidence. Okay? Puts Mr. Buckman at the crime scene, and then in closing arguments, they're going to say he raped her. Okay? Gratuitous. Certainly improper, but an argument, right? And I have to mess with that. I have the evidence the state is using to say he was at that scene of the crime. It's evidence that the court completely ignored. And I understand why the judge may have done it. You look at the motion to dismiss, and it's not there either. But this is the vehicle that got us here is a motion to dismiss by the county attorney's office after the receipt of DNA evidence. And so in this case, we got those panties back, couldn't find the crotch that was cut out for testing, but we had the panties. So we tested those. Panties show single donor, just like Dr. Roy found back in 1989, 88. Murder was February 19, 1988. But we were able to find the presence of the victim, of course, in her own underwear, but we are also able to identify that Herman Buckman is excluded as a source of the DNA. Now, if there's any question about whether there's an inclusion, exclusion, the district court answers that for you at T84 in the district court order, where she says the evidence shows an exclusion of Mr. Buckman as a source of that DNA. So there you have what you're looking for. You have the case as it was prosecuted, and you want to be able as an appellate court to now assess whether or not the new evidence meets the thresholds for either exoneration or for a new trial. But you know that you're an appellate court. You know you shouldn't be doing this the first time. That long down, that should have happened at the district court level. And it wasn't done. It was just ignored. It shouldn't have been. Everybody's talking about it now. But it was not talked about down below. And so one of the possibilities in this case is to send it back and say, hey, you know, we've asked you to examine this case in light of the way the prosecution prosecuted it. You didn't do that. Could you please do that now? I don't think you need to do that because it's clear. It compromises something that the state prosecuted a lot of the time. And I now want to turn to the blood evidence. And the first DNA case, we came back as a defense and said, hey, look, we went back and tested the things that Dr. Roy said had blood evidence on it, blood of the victim. And hey, it's not there. And you said, well, it might still be on the steering wheel. It might still be on the steering wheel cover. It might still be on the floor mats of the defendant's car. And so we can't say what's wrong with Sarah. We tested the steering wheel cover. We tested the floor mats now. Also, no evidence of blood. No evidence of biological material at all. So nothing, it seems, in this case, that has been tested by an outside source has come to show that Dr. Roy was correct when she said there was blood evidence. Do I have to show that she lied? Do I have to show that that she came into the court and gave the jury false testimony? I don't think I need to meet that threshold. I'm here to tell you that the way the case was prosecuted is compromised by the new DNA testing that cast doubt as to whether or not that was ever blood in the first place, whether or not that was biological in the first place. And it makes sense. You got to consider how this crime happened. It's two shots in the back of the head. She's in the front car. And the person they see fleeing the scene is Goldie Fisher. Nobody places Herman Buckman there as an eyewitness. They place Goldie there. And they say his slippers are out there. Well, his slippers out there, how did the blood get on the floor mats? You know, that would be the shoes with the blood. Where is he? And then, of course, they've had contact with Goldie Fisher throughout the night before. Their history is they do drugs with her. They buy drugs from her. They've had a lot of interactions with her. The cool pack of cigarettes right next to Goldie Fisher's blue slippers. Then she comes back and she's with Mr. Buckman the next day, probably in his car. Don't know who was driving, no one testified that. Don't know who's in passenger seat, but you wouldn't expect her blood to be in his car. You don't have anybody putting his car at the crime scene. Doesn't show up till the next day when they're shopping in it. And so it does matter. And to not have gone through the effort of comparing the new evidence to what happened at trial is untenable. It's unreasonable. It meets your threshold of what an abuse of discretion is. And I see I'm out of time. And for those reasons, Your Honors, I'm asking that this case either be sent back for additional findings of fact or reversed completely.
Thank you. How much time did we take?
37 seconds.
We'll add 37 seconds to the state's time.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. The district court correctly granted the state's motion to dismiss and denied Buckman relief under the act. First, I take issue with counsel's position that the district court's order was somehow lacking in this case. If the analysis was simple, it's because this case is simple. I'll start where he left off with the blood evidence. The items that were tested were the steering wheel cover and the floor mats from Buckman's vehicle. The results of that testing were the same as the results obtained for the testing that was performed on Buckman's clothing back in the early 2000s, and those results are inconclusive. When receiving the inconclusive results regarding the testing of Buckman's clothing back in this prior opinion that this court entered in 2004, this court found that the inconclusive results do not warrant a new trial, and the same is true here. Inconclusive results would not have produced a substantially different result if admitted at trial, because it's essentially a wash. They do nothing to disprove the evidence that was entered at trial, and they do nothing to confirm that evidence. The state also disagrees with Buckman's claim that the results were exculpatory because they show the absence of blood. The inability to detect blood 30 years after trial does not mean that the original trial testimony was false. At trial, the testimony was that there was a very small, an extremely small amount of blood on the steering wheel cover. And the analyst at that time was unable to find any additional blood on the floor mats after receiving the scrapings from the lab. Thus, it's no surprise that there was no additional blood found 30 years later. Moving to the semen, the results do not exonerate Buckman. This is not a sexual assault case. The results establishing that he was not the semen donor do not disprove an element for the crimes which he was actually convicted of, which was first-degree murder charged in the alternative theories of premeditated or felony murder relating to a robbery and use of a deadly weapon to commit a felony. The testing results regarding the semen also do not warrant a new trial, because had the evidence been admitted, it would not have produced a substantially different result. There was no evidence that the victim had been sexually assaulted prior to her murder, and there was no evidence that she had sex immediately prior to her murder. The semen simply established that she had sexual intercourse with someone at some point in time prior to the murder. The trial testimony was that it could have been up to 8 to 12 hours prior. We disagree with the claim that Buckman has raised that the semen evidence was used by the state to place the defendant at the crime scene. This is not true, because the state didn't know when the semen evidence, when the sex actually had occurred. If the jury had known that Buckman was excluded as the contributor to the semen, the verdict would not have changed, because that was not necessary to prove the murder. And the same would be said if Buckman had been included as the contributor to the semen. It wouldn't have meant that he murdered her. there was no link between the murder and the fact that the victim had sexual intercourse at some point in time prior to her murder. I think I adequately addressed in my brief the overwhelming evidence of guilt, a lot of which I believe that Buckman has overlooked when addressing the claims here on appeal. I do not intend to go through all of that, but I do think the evidence was overwhelming in this case, and there's nothing that the DNA testing would have done to change that result. Unless this court has any questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. There's no time for rebuttal, is that correct? Very well. The case is submitted and counsel are excused and the court is adjourned.